For someone out there who doesn't know what the IJC is or about the water agreement, what do you want people to understand about what it is and why it's important?
Well, I think we'll talk about it on two levels. One is the IJC was established under a treaty that is boundary-wide from the Atlantic to the Pacific, the Yukon-Alaska border as well. And all of the boundary is impacted by water, and we're here to help the governments prevent and resolve disputes. We're very binational, we're science-based, we're consensus-driven. And when we make recommendations or make decisions on behalf of the government, we are doing so thinking of the best interests of the watershed and not wearing the hat and advocating only for our side of the boundary. Except in the instances where there are dams, where the treaty establishes that if there's an order to be put on a dam, which is to say, how will the dam spill water, how will it hold water to be fair to the upstream and to the downstream interests, to also be cognizant of the shipping interests if there's shipping on there, and the hydro interests if there's hydro. All of that is done, in most cases, on international boundary dams by the IJC with the concurrence of the government, so it's a three-way agreement. In other cases, on water quality issues, we are not a permitting, we're not a regulatory body. We give advice to the governments. And in the special case of the Great Lakes, there is an extra standing reference, we call it, which is to say the Great Lakes Water Quality Agreement. The first one was signed with Nixon and the first Trudeau in 1972, and now it's been updated several times. And it's a commitment by each of the governments, the government of Canada and the United States, to keep the lakes clean and to restore them where they have been degraded. And then it asked the IJC, as an independent treaty organization, not really a part of either government, but part of both countries, to, on a triennial basis, look at the government's work and assess how well they're doing it. The governments have made commitments. We're to say, are you living up to those commitments? So there's a lot of it's technical. But equally important is going out and listening to the public, and that's what we're doing in Milwaukee. We heard this afternoon from scientists who have a particular focus on this region, in the Western Basin, as we say. That is to say, we're a long way from Niagara Falls or the state of New York, because that's how broad the lakes are. But what's happening here in Western Lake Michigan that we need to know about, both from the perspective of the scientists who study it, and very much so from the citizens who live with it. And we'll repeat this another dozen times around the basin, and that will all make a difference in what we write and how we speak to the governments when we tell them, this is where we think you're doing well, this is where we think you should do better.
So that's in the form of a report.
That's right. We'll issue a report probably next summer. Again, it's a triennial report. It's the first triennial report. The water quality agreement was rewritten to recognize climate change, to recognize today's science as opposed to science that may be decades old. And the commitments are based on modern science, and we'll see how well they're doing.
One of the people who spoke called for a binational resilience strategy.
Yes.
Around climate change. So my understanding was that doesn't exist, does not exist.
It does not exist. You have two governments in Canada and the United States, led by two elected individuals who are very much concerned about climate change. Prime Minister Trudeau and President Obama have clearly made statements as to their commitments, but it's not integrated, and people need to be able to, people and local governments, businesses, what can they expect? And we need to encourage the governments to the full extent that science can provide and might have some predictive intelligence to help anticipate we're not going to avoid climate change. We're not going to avoid the, obviously, the huge rainstorms that are forces that were unseen in the past, or the extended summers, the change of water quality and certainly water temperature. All of that's going to make a difference. The governments need to help the 40 million basin residents prepare and adapt.
So that is a message that you'll take back to?
Well, nothing is set until you've got six commissioners agreeing to what the advice should be. But we have heard that advice loud and clear from some of our advisors, because the IJC, according to the agreement between the two countries, has established committees, and one of them is the Water Quality Board, made up of people from around the basin, both countries, experts, citizens, and we have been encouraged by that body to carry the message forward that one of the most important things and one of the most important deficits right now is the lack of a binational approach to planning for adaptation for climate change.
So I realize that it's a matter of the commissioners coming together on this, but are there elements of what you've heard today in Milwaukee, what you've heard or learned, that will influence you as you move forward with your report in particular?
Yeah. Well, one of the things that has come up repeatedly this evening with the public is the need for investment and redevelopment protection of green infrastructure, which of course means protecting and enhancing the wetlands, letting the more natural systems, nature systems, do their work to filter the water, to keep it clean, to slow it down, to help prevent the worst ravages of flooding. All of those things have been said and said repeatedly. We heard a great deal this afternoon from the scientists about the interface between agriculture and water quality, Green Bay in particular. We heard in Milwaukee about basic science that wouldn't have been possible a few years ago, understanding the DNA of contaminants, of bacteria, of the water quality stressors. How can we do a better job understanding, how can we do a better job of closing beaches when they have to be closed, but not doing it so late that the damage has been done? And more importantly, how can we do a better job in preventing the contamination that causes the public officials to have to close the beach? That's the goal.
So another comment that came up this evening, or a short presentation, was around citizen monitoring, river, you know, streamside monitoring. Yeah. And you made the point access in itself is so important. What do you mean?
Well, I was told today when we took a very pleasant and informative trip in the harbor, and as we approach the Freshwater Science Center, you can go for 9 miles and there's only one place to put in with a kayak or a canoe. There's no access here. Now, I understand, because we've seen this over and over, where in the last century and the century before, the waterfront was taken over for the heaviest industries and for shipping, and understandably so. But if people can't access the water here, they're not going to advocate for the water. And the one thing that I recognize is that the Great Lakes are situated between and within two great democracies. The governments respond to public demand for protection and cleanup of the waters. If you look at the last great period of advancement, it was after the 60s, when there was just public demand would not rest until both governments, as well as the state and provincial and local governments, had done something. And it was the Environmental protections that were passed into law in that period only came because of public demand. They will only come again because of public demand. And the public won't feel empowered if they don't have access. So restoring the public access to this beautiful waterfront area is absolutely essential. And then engaging people wherever they live. Maybe it's a creek that they're going to monitor. But citizen monitoring with getting kids involved, getting students involved, getting everybody involved, that is the irresistible force that elected officials cannot ignore.
So earlier in the day, you spoke of the need for more protections versus, or the a change in the vocabulary, that we should be talking about protections, not regulations.
That's right. Who wants to be regulated? I don't want to be regulated. You don't want to be regulated. My father was in business. He certainly didn't want to be regulated. But he wanted his customers, and he was a butcher, he sold them meat. He wanted his customers to be protected. The public needs protections, and frankly, you too often hear politicians say, oh, we've got too many regulations. I'd like to hear them say, oh, we've got too many protections. They're not going to say that. So why give them the vocabulary, those who seem not to either understand or care? It is about protecting public health. It is about protecting the ecosystem. It is about protecting the fish for the sake of the fish and for the sake of the fishermen. It's all about protections, and some of those protections need to be written into law.
So as you think about your years as a commissioner, and you know, where do you find the most encouragement and what are you most concerned about?
I find the most encouragement in the public interest. We're at everybody here tonight in this room could be doing something else. They're here because they care. And I really have been impressed in small towns and in big cities around the basin, as I've heard from people, they understand where they live. They've got something to say. It's almost always based on good information and real experience. And if we can harness those voices, we will protect the lakes. Let me tell you something else that's heartening. The GLRI, the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, is a bipartisan investment of hundreds of millions of dollars, well over $1 billion, in trying to clean up damage from past generations and prevent pollution and damage going forward. That's been at a time where people in Washington have a hard time agreeing on anything, even passing a budget. And yet there's bipartisan support for the Great Lakes. There's a sense not just in the eight Great Lakes states, but beyond, that there has to be investments in order to restore and protect these lakes. So that's encouraging. It's encouraging and actually very moving to see how the two countries work together. We take it for granted that the Canadians and the United States can work together, but I recognize we do have different cultural backgrounds. There are some differences that are I would not have known if I hadn't worked with Canadians, but Canadians and the Americans are committed to working together. It's probably one of the best things about this job.
And what's on your worry list?
I think the greatest challenge is adaptation to climate change. There will really be stressors that will be increased because of climate change. We see that and heard about that today from the scientists about how the warmer waters are creating nutrient problems that are even greater. So we're going to have to work harder and invest more and be smarter just to stay in place. And if we really want to make progress, climate change is going to require a great deal of investment. I worry about prevention. so that we don't, whether it's mining, because there's some mining that's proposed for the Great Lakes that I think, I worry about the damages done from CAFOs, agriculture. Agriculture is essential. Water is essential. We have to learn to what the carrying capacity of our water is, not just what the carrying capacity of our land is, and we have to make it work together. I worry about the pipelines. I worry about the closure of many different nuclear power plants. I worry about the Great Lakes becoming a repository of high-level waste. There's plenty to worry about, but the good news is that there's an informed citizenry. There's a generation coming up that just assumes that these waters are going to be protected. And it's the governance, it's the democracy, it's the openness, it's the participation, it's the demand for protection and the empowerment of people. That's the good news.
So how many times are you asked about the Waukesha water decision and what the IJC's role was in it?
I was surprised that I have not been asked about Waukesha on this trip. I think I'm working with a very informed group of people here. And the treaty which established the IJC is very clear. It says, for the purposes of the questions on diversion, Lake Michigan is not an international lake. So we don't have any authority at all. We're not empowered to speak.